every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 9 a.m. And coming up, Democracy in Motion is off this week. Instead, we'll hear MOVE activists Pam and Mike Africa on MOVE's past, present, and future. We'll also hear an excerpt from the annual dinner tribute to Black political prisoners and their families with keynote speaker Lynn Stewart. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, followed at 10:15 by Flashpoints. At 11... The Digital Divide is also taken this week off, and we'll hear Radio EcoShock on climate misunderstood impacts. And thank you to all the KBOO members for your continuing support. If you're not currently a member of the KBOO Foundation, you can correct that oversight at kboo.fm. Just click where it says donate today. And now, this.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Youth Summit, taking place February 12th and February 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club in Portland. February 12th will feature a workshop called Healing Ourselves to Raise Our Future and a performance by spoken word artist S. Renee Mitchell. February 13th will feature workshops on topics ranging from becoming an MC to healthy living to information on going to Africa. That evening, the summit will close with a youth talent showcase. Again, that's the Portland Youth Summit, February 12th and 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club, 5250 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kbo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., Grassroot News will honor the memory, legacy, and life of Malcolm X. Join us for the music, the memory, and the deconstruction of Malcolm's political career, his split from the Nation of Islam, and the course of actions that led to his assassination 51 years ago on February 21st, 1965. As Ozzie Davis eulogized,
Prince, our own black shining prince, who didn't hesitate to die because he loved us so.
Again, on February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., join us as we honor the memory, life, and legacy of Malcolm X.
And as promised, our friends at Sprouts Radio have brought us this program with Pam and Mike Africa of the MOVE Foundation, right here on KBOO Portland, your community radio.
Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience produced at a different location every week.
So you know, understand what I'm saying, because I'm talking about love. I'm talking about love for yourself. I'm talking about love for your children. And that's all that is.
I'm Matt Swanson Hurley of Pacifica Radio. February is Black History Month. In honor of that, on today's Sprouts, we will hear from Pam Africa, a public speaker and activist involved with the organization MOVE. Founded in 1972 by John Africa, MOVE is a Philadelphia-based black liberation group that participates in public demonstrations against racism, police brutality, and government corruption, among many other issues. As some background for today's show, MOVE has made the news several times in the past, the first of which was a 1978 police shootout, resulting in the death of a police officer and life sentences given to 9 MOVE members accused of the officer's murder. Years later, in 1985, another standoff with police occurred, leading to police dropping 2 bombs on the MOVE compound. The resulting fire engulfed 65 nearby homes, left 11 people dead, including John Africa and 5 children, and more than 250 people were left homeless. Mumia Abu-Jamal, who is frequently mentioned in today's program, is currently serving a life sentence for the alleged 1981 murder of police officer Daniel Faulkner, a trial that is often faced with scrutiny by members of MOVE and the public to this day. Pam Africa, joined by her brother Mike Africa, appeared on Pacifica affiliate WIOF-LP Woodstock 104 in Woodstock, New York on January 16, 2016, and they used the platform to voice their standpoints on many of these issues.
Okay, I'm not going to do much talking because the people that are here, I really want them to have as much say as they can get. I want to start this off with Pam Africa, who's one of my favorite speakers. She's going to talk about political prisoners and what a mess this country is. Take it away, Pam.
Okay, I have my brother here, Mike Africa. He was born in prison when the RZA administration attacked our family in 1978 because we spoke up and continue to speak up about the wrongs that is happening in our communities. When I'm talking about our communities, I'm talking about the world communities and with environmental issues and the problems in the hospitals with urban removal, all these different things. But my family was locked up. And first, our home was attacked in 1978 by the RZA administration. They brought thousands of pounds of ammunition, machine guns, hand grenades. And I'm not talking about May 13th when they dropped the bomb. That's 1985. I'm talking about 1978 when the RZA administration came out to murder our family again. And this was not the first time, but it was the first time that it was televised around the world. And my brother, Mike Africa, he wasn't even born. I think Debbie might have been just going into her 9th month of pregnancy when this had occurred. So, you know, I want my brother to speak first, you know, because his mother and 2 other of our sisters is fighting for parole. So, Mike, on the move.
On the move. On the move. Like as Pam said, my parents are in prison. They've been in prison since 1978 for the last 7 years, since 2008. They've been denied parole. You know, we've been fighting for parole for them. They was accused of killing a cop on August 8th, 1978, but they said the cop was killed with a bullet from a gun. But the women don't even have weapons charges on them, but they still are forced to stay in prison and be denied parole. One of the reasons the parole board said that they were denying them parole is because they said they refused to admit guilt. But why are they supposed to admit to something that they didn't do? Furthermore, the charges that they have on them aren't even charges that would make them guilty, but they're continuing to keep them in prison because of the fact that they are MOVE members and they won't turn against the teaching of John Africa. That is clear and evident in the fact that they were not the only people that were in the house on August 8th, 1978. There was other people that were in the house, but once they were arrested, they were released from police custody once they were found out to not even be MOVE members. So it's a long and drawn out history where the city of Philadelphia and the federal government have targeted MOVE and wanted to eliminate the organization. So we've been fighting to keep going and to be strong and to continue to talk about and expose the wrong in the system. And as you know, if you fight against the system, if you expose the system, then you will be targeted by the system. But you should also know that you're not targeted by the system only if you speak out, because people that don't speak out are also targeted by the system. The system targets anybody. And if you're Black or poor or are of a certain social class that is not accepted by the system, then you'll be targeted by the system. And the cops run around doing whatever they want to do. They shoot people down in the street. They don't go to jail for it. They don't be punished for it. They actually get rewarded for it. So these are the things that MOVE always spoke out about. The injustice in the system is something we've always talked about. And as a result of it, we were targeted as well. That is the real reason behind our people being in prison. John Africa taught us a long time ago that the system is controlled by pressure, and we have to keep the pressure on them. We have to put the pressure on them to do what is right, what is necessary for us. And that's what us fighting against the unjust parole stipulations is all about. So the women come up for parole in May. We're having a program in New York City on February 12th to make more people aware and to put more pressure on the system to release our people. So February 12th, look out for it in New York City. Riverside Church in New York City will be there February 12th to fight for the release, for the parole of our MOVE women.
So Mike Africa, can you tell us, what are the teachings of John Africa?
The teachings of John Africa is life. We believe in life. We believe in what is right. I don't mean life in no abstract form. I'm talking about the air, the water, the soil. This is why we're targeted. John Africa taught us to understand and value that which keeps you alive. And when you're talking about doing something that is keeping you healthy, then you're talking about eating healthy food. Well, if you're talking about eating healthy food, then you're talking about going against the industry that the system put out here to fight against the healthy food. I'm saying, you know, GMO, Monsanto, you got these people running around poisoning the food. I mean, they got so many laws against you even being allowed to grow your own food. John Africa taught MOVE people to be strong, to be healthy, to not be dependent on the system. It's the system that make people sick. It's the system that give people all of these medicines. I mean, looking right here, when we came in the studio, we saw a piece of paper facing the Hudson Valley's heroin problem. These drugs that are out here, I mean, crack came in with Ronald Reagan. You know, it ain't come in with the animals. It ain't come in with the wolves. It ain't come in with the whales that are slaughtered into virtual extinction. It ain't come in with the cats in Africa. I'm saying, all of this stuff is a result of the system. And John Africa taught us to do what is necessary to be strong so that we can understand the importance of strength so that we don't fall victim to these things, to this weakness of the system. So, you know, that's why we exercise constantly. We try to eat as healthy as we can. We constantly drink plenty of water. And we try to stay away from things that we know are going to be things that's just going to hurt us and poison us. And because of that, we exposed other people to the teaching of John Africa. MOVE women have been taught and given a strategy by John Africa's teaching so that we don't even have to go to hospitals to have our babies. We don't be getting sick all the time. And that's because we just believe in health and we stay active. And John Africa gave us this understanding so that we don't fall victim to this stuff the way like others do, you know. And also, not only the health and physical health, but the mental health as well. Because people are dependent on the system because they've been trained to be. It is illegal to not send your children to school. People should really question that. If the government was really doing something good for us, why are they forcing us to do things that they are training into us? Not something that we're getting because we need it, but they force you to go to school and force that on you, but they won't force healthcare on you. You know, they won't force healthy food on you, but we're living in this system where this is the kind of stuff that happens. I mean, you got politicians who are out and out lying to people, and people are forced to vote for it. You know what I'm saying? If you got to choose the lesser of two evils, what kind of system are we really living in? They're both evil, but you have to choose one of them? That makes absolutely no sense at all. I'm saying, if somebody put a glass of water, a poisonous water, on the table and say, well, this one has 100% poison in it. Well, this one has 90% poison in it. Do you really have to choose one of them? That makes absolutely no sense. So, you know, John Africa taught us you ain't got to choose either one of them. What you should choose is what's right. So what we do is we push both of those glasses of poison off the table and drink something else. And, you know, eat healthy food, eat food from the trees, eat food from the ground. As a result of that, teaching other people that strategy, and that is something that really threatens the system because you're not dependent on them. You're not looking for them and expecting from them and going to them and shopping from them. So when that happens, everybody knows what happened when the system starts losing money. They panic. Gas prices goes up. I mean, you got to pay for everything. You got to pay for water. Give them a minute and we'll be walking around with oxygen tanks strapped to our backs and we'll be walking around sucking down air that they created because they are poisoning everything and making you pay for everything that you need. This is John Africa's teaching, and we're seeing a result of John Africa's wisdom because years ago, you didn't have to buy water. There was a time where you could twist your tap on your water and you could drink the water straight out of the sink. Now, you're taking a risk.
And there were springs.
There were springs. We used to go to the spring all the time. The springs are shut down. You know, they're shutting them down because they say that they're polluted, Maybe they are. But maybe they're also just shutting them down just because they were free and they want people to pay for water. They say the bottled water industry makes more money annually than Coca-Cola because so many people are bottling water. And if you look at the water that they're bottling, where are they getting it from? Because, come on, let's be real. I mean, they say New York City has some of the cleanest tap water in the country because the water comes from upstate and the water is really clean. But look, give the system a minute. They destroy everything they touch. These people are just maniacs. So we don't sit by quietly and act like it don't exist. We actually talk about it.
You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. Today, we're hearing from Pam Africa, joined by her brother, Mike Africa, both of MOVE, a Black liberation activist group based in Philadelphia, as they voice their standpoints on issues such as racism, police brutality, and government corruption.
I'd like to hear what you told us at the community center at the Martin Luther King commemoration regarding Mumia's recent history in prison and what's going on with him.
On the way up, I was looking at a card that had a tape like over Mumia's mouth, and it was called The Silencing of Mumia. Because before we got into the situation with the diabetes, we were dealing with an issue where Mumia spoke at God of College and gave a commencement speech, and the FOP went crazy about this. What's FOP? Fraternal Order of Police. And, you know, it just seems sort of strange because this is a smaller college. It was a classroom that he was speaking to. Mumia has spoken at colleges around the world with a large audience, and it had been videoed and everything. Not a peep out of them. So Goddard Mumia was asked to speak there, and the FOP went crazy. They went and they brought Maureen Faulkner up. They got senators in order to try to pass this bill to silence Mumia and anyone who spoke out on Mumia's behalf. So in order to do it for Mumia, because they learned when they tried to do it when he wrote his book, stop him from being able to write, it had to go all the way across the board, and it was backed up off of that. Because one thing, corporate America, they don't give a damn about these arguments that's going back and forth between the FOP and the legislation that they were putting on the floor meant that not only that they were silencing Mumia, but anybody that wrote a book on Mumia, like we're having this radio show right now, and all you have been subject for a lawsuit. And it didn't have to come from Maureen Faulkner, which is Officer Faulkner's wife, who's Mumia's accused of killing. It could come from her third cousin. It could come from anybody that was related and said that this really made them feel bad. Fraternal Order Police, FOP, fools on parade. But they're dangerous fools that's on parade because they'll listen to anything and will do anything. They're hired hitmen and women. They come into our communities to gang up because it's like gang war. These are the guys with the guns, and they're coming to you like if you're on your step or, you know, in your community, and you're not doing anything. You're drinking a beer on your steps. They tell you, you know, you got to go in the house. These things lead to confrontations in the community, and Black people wind up being killed. A lot of people want to believe that these people are acting outside of the law. They're taught to be this way. And if you only look at how many Black men, women, and children who have been murdered in this last year and years before, how many cops have you seen sitting on death row, going to jail? None of them. They bring charges up against them, then they get dropped. When they dropped a bomb, killing 11 men, women, and children in my family, and my sister Ramona Africa was the only person to go to jail, these people, when they had a civil hearing after my sister got out of jail, there was a civil suit filed. They dropped a military C4 explosive bomb on my family. The judge told them that they could not use the word bomb or C4 military explosive. The word that had to be used is an entering device. Other people played that game, but my sister called it what it was when she was up there. They dropped a bomb on her. When the trial was over, they found them liable for the crime. What was the crime? They dropped a bomb and killed 11 men, women, and children. They said that they were liable. Do liable mean guilty? If you're liable for dropping the bomb, aren't you guilty of murder? My family, when they wanted to tell people the reason why this was happening, is because MOVE used foul language. MOVE was describing foul things with the English language. That word, MF-er, that ain't something that, you know, MOVE invented. That's their word. And it describes them very well. Anytime somebody just lock up, maim, kill, murder from the time a baby is in the belly, mass murdering babies. Then when they come out, then they got people who will protest. And this is the hypocrisy of this system. People will protest about abortion rights people. And I'm not confused. And, you know, I'm not an abortion rights person. I am pro-life all the way across the board, whether you're in the womb or outside of the womb. But we'll turn around and protest in front of an abortion center and turn around and protect, uphold a death sentence on someone. You know? Well, uphold Ritalin in the schools. I'm not putting these people down. I'm just saying that the confusion that goes on here by people who think they're doing the right thing, because you taught to think inside the box. You can't see no further than this, like a donkey with blinders on. What they tell you to see, you can't see over here, that you talking about saving the life over here, and then tell your sons and your daughters to go to fight this man's war. Tell your sons and daughters that a politician is right. Well, we voted for it. I don't vote. I didn't vote to get in this mess, but I fight like hell to get out of it and bring other people along with me. What I say to people who vote, you better make it work for you. People will say that if you don't vote, you don't count. You damn right, I do not count in polluting this water. I fight to get it unpolluted. I don't belong in that category, and are we giving our children Ritalin, which can turn them out to be heroin addicts later. Ritalin is a drug.
And
it's
many
a
other
dangerous drug. Prozac.
Prozac. Yeah,
all these drugs they give out
to children,
to babies and stuff, and then turn around and lock them up later on. A child who gets hooked on Prozac or Ritalin is dependent upon that drug. If you come out of school and you don't have a job and you got a dependency, somebody better look out. Because with that dependency that they have, they're going to need to get what they have to get it on. So then child that you put on it, all of a sudden now you're going to call them a junkie. You're going to say that they're not worth anything. You're going to send them to another drug place where they give them methadone. And you learn about the horrors of that. But you keep voting these fools in that continue to do that. They want to tell you how good they're working for you. Well, if they're working really good for you, how come you got more hospitals today than you had yesterday? How come every corner that you look on, there's this drugstore, that drugstore? At one point, you used to have the family doctor in the community.
Let me jump in a little on this. We have a heroin epidemic because the government is bringing in these drugs.
That's right.
And now the legislature wants to pass a law that if someone supplies heroin, say two kids go and one kid cops heroin and he gives it to his friend. If his friend ODs, they now want to give a life sentence or a death sentence to the kid who supplied it. But yet we have the government bring it in C4 planes by tons, and none of them are going to jail. I just wanted to bring that up. That's just another way for them to keep filling our prisons.
Exactly. And killing our people, you know? And when I say our people, I'm talking about people. I'm not putting color on them or anything else.
Right.
You know, this is part of that war that they have, and are they keep us fighting each other? Yes, they do. They kill more of us than they kill anybody. That's because of that hateful nature. But at the same time, as long as we are fighting each other, we're not looking at them. and of the dangers that they're doing, like this heroin situation here. It's no different in Philadelphia, but you don't see people in the street fighting or flyers, to my knowledge, it could be happening, about this heroin epidemic. They need to deal with the issue of heroin, and the cure for heroin is not methadone. If somebody died of a methadone overdose, do you go after the doctor who gave it to them? Do you go after the nurse in the schools that you made the drug pusher? Because they're the ones who determine whether or not a child, or if they send them to psychiatrists or whatever, who gets on Ritalin. Because a child is up or moving around, or they understand that these people's talking pure bull. The fight is so overwhelming. But the fight can be won. The reason why the fight hasn't won so far, because they have people duped into thinking that you can't beat this thing, this monster, this government, and corporations sit way up in there in the air. When you're going after the president, to the mayor, you're going after the FOP, when you got to go to the top down, these are nothing but errand boys for big business. And all to put the fight is not at us. These are cold-blooded murderers. And we keep saying the answer to this is to vote. Well, if that was the answer, none of this wouldn't be happening. We wouldn't be sitting here talking about poisoning our water, our air, the miseducation of our children, talking about bombing and raping and stealing throughout the whole United States. We wouldn't be talking about that if politics worked. They'll turn around and say that people died for you to have this vote. People at that point was fighting for something that was new, that they thought would make a change. And it hasn't made a change. When I hear somebody turn around and say, Malcolm said the ballot or the bullet. You know, like the ballot was the solution. They gave Malcolm the bullet. They gave Martin the bullet. They gave Kennedy the bullet. They keep giving our children the bullet. And they keep saying, vote. This is our solution. Like this fool Obama, because if he really gave a damn about anybody, he couldn't do the things that he's doing now. Oh, and he gave you Obamacare. Excuse me? Is that the solution to the mass murders of babies? He gave us Obamacare, but I'm saying he allowed some fool to turn around and charge $1,000 per pill. He know that. He know that in India it's $4 a pill. He is the errand boy for big business. He do what big business tell him to do, as anybody. And Bernie Sanders getting there, it's the same thing. We keep looking outside ourselves. They ain't got sense enough to take and fight for their air, their water. One thing that Obama would do, he'll fight like hell to keep his two daughters out of this war while pushing yours in the war. The only way that people can get an education or a job right now without a whole lot of fuss, you go sign yourself up to go rape, rob, murder, steal, kill on somebody else's land. While here, your mother's being beaten. Your daughter is being drugged. Your son is being raped in these prisons. Your people, our people being picked up off the street, thrown in jail for crimes that they haven't committed. The crimes of this government is a crimes of everybody. Why do you think children think that they can go ahead and all these gangs with big money that put drugs and stuff in our communities and stuff from big business think that they can get away with it? Because they see it. Why a cop think that he can shoot somebody down in the street and get away with it? Body cams is the answer. People have body cams on and our children are still being shot down. Sure. And they still come up with a goddamn excuse. And I'm saying the solution to the problem is not to look outside yourself, but look inside yourself and decide you want to love yourself. You want to love your children, truly love them. And then when you do that, you will fight for them. And I'm saying guns, that ain't the solution. You got to kill the mentality that does this. This is why they kill King. King didn't have a damn gun. Malcolm didn't have a gun. Moo didn't have one. The power of truth and ability to wake people up and make them think and understand what the problem is. The problem is the dude to come in your neighborhood and shoot your child. The problem is us who allow that stuff to go on. I'm saying ain't no black cop, number one, is going to go in any white neighborhood, kill a white person, whether they pimp white with money or without, because they got to keep that separation going, and it got to keep that illusion going. Just understand, it's the language and all, you know, the things that I'm saying, they come from the fact that you're dealing with a foul, filthy system, and sometimes you cannot use words of beauty to describe the filth that these people do. So, you know, understand what I'm saying, because I'm talking about love. I'm talking about love for yourself. I'm talking about love for your children. And that's all that that is.
It used to be a thing about Pharaoh, let my people go. But at this day and time, it's a matter of my people, let Pharaoh go. I'm saying we hold on to this government. We cling to it. We make it what it is. And it's, you know, the only strength it has is the weaknesses it implants in us.
I want to move.
And we want to thank you, Pam, and friends for coming here and giving us the rap.
I want to thank you for the time that you've given us to speak out.
Thank you so much for coming. It's really an honor to have you here.
Bomb in the street, gun in the hood, mob or police. Black on the corner with a line full of fiend and a bottle full of lean and a mother on a scheme. These days of frustration keep going to the front. Yeah, I duck these cold faces. Post up, feed, fight, hope for basis. Dreams are reality's peace. Blow steam in the face of the beast. Sky can fall down, we can cry now. Look at me, mother, I smile, I love my.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to MOVE members Pam and Mike Africa as they voiced their standpoints on issues such as racism, police brutality, and government corruption when they appeared on WIOF LP Woodstock 104 in Woodstock, New York on January 15, 2016. Our contributors this week included Pam Africa and Mike Africa of MOVE in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Randy Steele and Joe Barton of WIOF LP in Woodstock, New York. Production assistance came from Randy Steele and Joe Barton. Music you heard included The Charade by D'Angelo and the Vanguard and I by Kendrick Lamar. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio, thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producer was myself. I'm Matt Swanson Hurley of Pacifica Radio. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
And thank you, Pacifica Radio, for sharing that edition of Sprouts with KBOO Portland. Coming up next, we hear an excerpt from the annual dinner tribute to Black political prisoners and their families held on January 17th in New York City. We'll hear the keynote speech by attorney Lynn Stewart, who was imprisoned for aiding and abetting an organization that was labeled a terrorist organization by the U.S. government. The host and first speaker in this segment of the tribute is Daqui Siddiqui.
Welcome to the 20th anniversary of our dinner tribute to the families of our political prisoners. This tribute represents the ties that bind our revolutionary love, collective commitment, cooperative economics with you, our community, our political prisoners, and their families. How grateful and honored we are that so many of you have chosen to spend this afternoon with us today, honoring these soldiers of Black liberation. This tribute allows us to challenge the criminalization, distortions, much maligned and marginalized history that dominates the telling of the Black Panther Party and Black Liberation Army in the mainstream and by far too many revisionists, historians, authors, filmmakers, activists, etc. This tribute is about ensuring that the legacy, commitment, and sacrifice of these members of the Black Panther Party, Black Liberation Army, is woven into the history telling of the Black freedom struggle. Many people say when they find out that they are still in prison, damn, still? Those of us involved in this work know that it is because they dared to struggle on our behalf. because they felt the need to serve, protect, and defend poor and working class people, children especially, from this racist capitalist country and its perpetuation of tyranny, terror, the violence of poverty, rampant police terror and murder, lack of decent housing, health care, and education. With this in mind, we chose 800 years of legacy, commitment, and sacrifice as our most appropriate theme, because it highlights the fact that 17 members of the Black Panther Party, Black Liberation Army, have served that number of years in collective political imprisonment. From slave imprisonment to political imprisonment to mass imprisonment, Black families in America have lived centuries and generations longing for the return of their captive mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, brothers, and sisters. It is what it is to be Black in America, having to fight for your right to be free, to be with your family. I stand before you with mixed feelings of ambivalence, frustration, disappointment, pride, joy, and a sense of accomplishment, because we are 20 years strong of this dinner tribute. And at the same time, it is 20 years more that our families have endured. The financial, emotional, spiritual hardship, the separation, the torture, and the deprivation that political imprisonment places on them and their loved ones. And yes, we've had some victories this past year. Our dear sister Lynn Stewart is here with us. Marshall Eddie Conway came home, as did Sekou Kambui. And my personal favorite and hero, my love, Sekou Odinga. Having said that, unless there is a popular movement and or organization besides the Jericho movement that includes the freedom of our political prisoners in its demands, others will remain behind the wall. A few have individual defense committees able to raise monies for specific legal challenges and win, but more face the uphill battle of a heavily controlled law enforcement parole board, and we know from experience what that has meant. In 1966, the Black Panther Party made plain with a 10-point platform and program what we want, what we believe, saying loud and clear that Black lives matter, with the creation of free breakfast programs, free health clinics, sickle cell anemia testing, food pantries, welfare rights advocacy, preventing evictions, providing elder care, et cetera. Before the destruction of the Black Panther Party and the government co-opted these survival programs, it waged war on the Black Panther Party and Black Liberation with the COINTELPRO program and law enforcement, from police to CIA to FBI to the courts to agent provocateurs, that caused dozens of party members to be driven into exile, assassinated, criminal prosecutions, and political imprisonment. People may not agree, or they may agree, with the tactics employed by the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army. The reality is, then as much as now, rampant police terror and murder of Black people demanded that the state be put on notice that Black lives mattered and that Black people would resist by arming and defending themselves against white on Black violence, state or private, wherever and whenever necessary. Today, poor and working class people across this country reap the fruits of the Black Panther Party's vision and labor. Sadly, the success of COINTELPRO and the government's war on Black liberation can be measured by the fact that not only do most people not know it was the Black Panther Party that initiated just about every social program people in need benefit from today, our freedom fighters Our freedom fighters have been disappeared into the abyss of America's prison death camps. Now, a new declaration that Black Lives Matter is spreading across the country, and young people are finding out more and more that the more things change, the more they stay the same. I want to turn the mic over to, when we talk about the people's warrior, Lynn Stewart is one of those attorneys. We don't care what the state says. She's one of those attorneys that I mentioned earlier who did and does the work for the people, because it's not just about the money. It's about justice. And she is one of our justice workers inside and outside. So without any further ado, I present to you Sister Lynn Stewart.
Hello, hello. You know, the worst thing about being in jail, we were talking about, Sekou was saying, Dequi was saying, was not the strip searches, was not being shackled, and shackled in a bus with a couple of guards carrying 9mm Glocks and 20 rounds of ammunition. The worst part of being in jail was not being able to be out here to do the work. And I know that everyone whose picture graces these walls feels exactly the same way. You miss your family, you miss your grandkids and kids, but what you miss most of all is doing the work. And it seems to me that ever since the late 60s and 70s, we have a movement that is suffering from a very large concussion. We hear speak concussion of football players, boxers, people who have been hit in the head to such a degree that their brains shifted and they faced the world, not only not understanding the world anymore, but also being fearful of what was out there. And I think ever since J. Edgar Hoover unleashed the dogs of COINTELPRO upon the movement, and those sweeps which put so many people in jail, the informants that were only too happy to come over and point the fingers at our warriors to make sure they would not be caught, all of that conspired to give the movement a large concussion from which we have not yet recovered. And when I say that, I mean that in the true sense of the word. We cannot ever recover unless we free our heroes and sheroes. It is necessary. We all recognize historically and intellectually that in the days when there was a Black Panther Party, a Black Liberation Army, a Red Guerrilla Movement, a United Freedom Front, a Weather Underground, a Prairie Fire Resistance, the FLN, etc., this world was a safer place for people of color. It was not the pace so fraught with danger that now a young man goes to Canada and asks for asylum because living while black in America is dangerous, dangerous to his very life. We need to do whatever we can do to bring home our brothers and sisters. And we've all said this. We all said that. And there's a wonderful list compiled by Joan Gibbs of things we can do. But it just seems to me that wherever you are, whatever you're doing, whoever you're talking to, I don't care whether it's work, I don't care whether it's your church, I don't care whether it's the girls that you go out with on a Friday night, talk political prisoners. You will be amazed at the reception once people understand what you're talking about. Because these men and women are true heroes. We do not make them visible enough. Our big task is to make them visible and make them sympathetic. When I have a chance to gather my grandchildren and tell them the stories of the trials I have been a part of, the United Freedom Front trial, the Monaco murder trial, the Larry Davis case, they are transfixed by these. And I say to any of you, if you're shy about getting up in front of your church, if you're not comfortable with going to the local Democratic club and speaking up, give me a call. I'm not afraid. And I got another guy here who makes sure I don't fall down the stairs. He's not afraid. And our grand sister, Betty Davis, she's not afraid. So if you need a little help, if you need someone to speak out, we're there. We could do that with you. And aside from speaking outward, we truly are a conduit. We must be the middle people between these brave men and women in jail and that outside world. And to do that, we have to do something that makes them at home with us. We can all send a postcard. And last couple of months ago, say, Ku and I were out on the coast, and Eric McDavid, who is a green warrior who served 9 years until they discovered some mislaid evidence, he spoke, and I tell you, it was very moving, about getting a postcard. He received a postcard while he was in jail, and he did 9 years, as I said, and the postcard just said, "Hi, Eric, how you doing? I was thinking about you. We're gonna work to get you out." That's all the postcard said, and he said, it just lifted his spirits, it made my day. Surely, surely everyone here can write a postcard to someone, and if you're lucky, they'll write you back, because to have exchange, to have a relationship with one of these prisoners is one of the richest experiences you will have. These are not just pictures on the wall. I have represented a lot of them. I have visited a lot of them in jail. These are real people, and they're super people. Any of you who've had a minute to sit down with Sekou, who was locked up for so long, his speech tonight, super. You've realized the humanity, the depth of his humanity. So send a postcard, send a birthday card. I know Jericho, New York puts out the birthdays every month. Send a letter, send a book. And as Sekou said, send some money. You have no idea. You're sitting there in jail, there's really nothing. And you get $20 in your commissary, and you can get, let me think, a Milky Way and a quart of ice cream, which will probably be melted before they ever deliver it. But you get it. And it's the little things that keep you going day after day after day. And as DeQuy said, we're spending $600 on cell phones, which when I got out, I didn't even know what it was, and $200 a month to keep them going. Surely we can sweeten the commissary accounts of many of our political prisoners. I know, for instance, Tom Manning, a wonderful artist. He doesn't have money to buy paints or chalk or any of the things he needs to paint. And anyone who's looking for, you know, for years in the late 60s, 70s, People wanted white working class heroes. And that is what Tom Manning is and was. He was a guy from South Boston with all the prejudices and bad news. And he got together with a guy named Ray Levasseur and Richard Williams and Jan Lahman. And they became the United Freedom Front. And they, like the other organizations I mentioned, they were able to say, we can get you anytime we want. And if you don't think that fear, respect, is part of self-defense, you are deluding yourself. It's not about being nice to these people. It's about showing them that we are as strong and determined and angry as we can be. I mentioned earlier that Ralph and I was talking to him about what I was going to say here tonight, and I said, I want to urge people to join me in direct action. We're not public enough. You know, you get a thing about saying, what would cause you to vote for such and such a candidate? Never list freeing political prisoners, much less reforming the prisons. Nothing. Completely invisible to that world. We have to become more visible. And as I said, and I'm not saying I like this because I have other ideas about direct actions. Don't tell my probation officer, please. But we should take it upon ourselves. We can go to Cuomo's office. We can go to a prison where we know there's a parole board meeting about someone that we care about, like Abdul Majeed, my good friend and sometimes client. We can go to the BOP in Washington, at least jam up their websites, jam up all their electronics. We can go to the parole boards in New Jersey, because that is what keeps Sundia there. And finally, and I was told this is not a smart thing to say or a wise thing or an appreciated thing, we have got to make ourselves known, make our power known, make our anger known, so that the PBA and like unto it, the other police organizations, whether they be in Philadelphia, New Jersey, New York, do not think they have the only say. We have a say, we have to express it, and we can't be afraid of them. And how do you not be afraid? You join. Join Jericho. Join the anarchist Black Cross movement. Join the National Civil, I'm not going to get the name right, but this is the group that basically supports Muslim prisoners. Used to be called Project Salam. Join a group. Be part of a group that does these things. Because that is what we must do. That is what we must do. We have to confront them in their faces. We're here. We don't just have dinners and enjoy each other's company. We know we're here to get in the fight. We're here to be recruited. We're here to do all those things they show people doing in those horrible video games, but we want to do them for real, with real people. And in closing, I just want to read from a person I was not acquainted with until I was in jail, but whose poetry just grabbed me. And I love poetry. I love poetry. I love how it raises the hair on my arms or on the back of my neck when it's good poetry. And this is a political prisoner. David Rice, slave name, one of the Omaha Two. I think he's on that wall. I can't see very clearly. A framed-up Black Panther from Omaha, where they've admitted that it was a frame-up, that he and his co-defendant, Poindexter, did not blow up a cop when they were accused. It was all fraught with FBI and informants, and not to say it, but they've been in jail, the two of them, for the last 40 years. 40 years. And yet Mongo, he is now using, he has a longer African name. He has become very, very immersed in his history, and he writes so well. I'm going to read you one of his truly militant poems. I think it may relate to a lot of folks here. It's called Dressed in Black. Yeah, we had guns, but wasn't tripping. Wasn't stuck in no death groove with visions of blood dripping and bullet wound fatalities stacking up like the modern day echoes of the nigger word erupting from contorted mouths of Africans lost, left to find themselves by themselves on city streets by communities of us that traded in black power for government jobs and mid-level management window dressing positions under glass ceilings with buckets and squeegees in hand as some of us searched not no mountains, but suburban tracts for our promised land. We had guns, but wasn't tripping. Picked up them pieces because justice was locked in a box and was screaming by politicians and cops who held the keys and was scheming to muzzle the screaming sounds with deception or outright force when that didn't work. As gangs dressed in blue, but they wasn't no Crips. But cops on the beat with guns on their hips hunted for bloods who was not dressed in red, except we bled all the same from the lead and the dead that we carried to be dropped in the dirt got too heavy in time for us to stay scared and be resting in peace like corpses in earth. While the everyday hurt of our people in pain throbbed like an ache in the knees you be feeling from too much time kneeling in prayer to a God who resembles the cops and the mayor of the city and big shots on school boards who was feeding our children with food for their heads that was making them sick and landlords who was greedy and part of all this was collecting the rent from the slums where we fought with roaches and rats and ceiling that leaked when it rained into buckets arranged on the floor, filling with water till they couldn't hold more so we couldn't stand still. We couldn't stand still after getting our fill of abuse that our people was facing. We had guns, but wasn't tripping. Wasn't throwing no sign, but the black power fist we flashed in salute to our sisters and brothers who had nothing to fear from us being strapped. We didn't have no sweat getting capped because we wasn't out to collect no stripes by reliving the hype of some thug life we learned watching mafia dons on TV taking turns using thugs to spill blood for cold cash. We had guns, but wasn't getting down like that. We had guns, but wasn't tripping. Police was thinking death and whipping was set in stone as a one-day deal. And how else was they supposed to feel when they could get down wrong and get away clean, doing dirt for the political machine, prowling our streets under its direction, enforcing unwritten rules of oppression on our people who were needing defense and protection and relief from attacks that came so frequent and hard, some of us had to put our lives on the line and stand guard. Finally, I just want to read from Mumia, because he said it so well, and it's a perfect ending to my remarks, I think. Mumia said, when a cause comes along, and you know in your bones that it is just, yet refuse to defend it, you begin to die. And I have never seen so many corpses walking around talking about justice. Mumia Abu Jamal, free them all, free them all, bring them home.
Free them all.
Free them all. Free them all.
Free them all.
Free them all. Okay. Now, if I don't fall off the stage. Thank you.
At 6:30 p.m., Prison Pipeline will air a Valentine's Day special to bring to light the fact that, because of incarceration, many people are separated from their friends, family, and lovers on Valentine's Day. We will be reading your short messages to your friends and loved ones on air. So whether you are behind bars and reaching out, or are out and reaching in, we welcome you to mail or email us your Valentine's messages. Our email address is kbooppc@gmail.com and our address is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Address your messages to Prison Pipeline Collective. Then tune in on February 15th at 6:30 p.m. to hear your messages read on air.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Holding On to the Sky, February 5th through 7th and 12th through 14th, 8 p.m. at the Peninsula Odd Fellows Lodge in Portland. Holding On to the Sky is an original play about earthquake preparedness, which weaves together stories of disaster, gentrification, health access, addiction, recovery, and resilience. Again, that's Holding On to the Sky, February 5th through 7th and 12th through 14th, 8 p.m., at the Peninsula Odd Fellows Lodge, 4834 North Lombard Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.